Hello, everyone. This is Eric Pennington, and welcome to the Spirit of EQ podcast. We're glad that you've tuned in. Hey, a few things we wanted to tell you at the beginning of the show, and that's this podcast was created to be a tool to help you, primarily to discover and grow your EQ. Science and our own lived experiences confirm that the better we are at managing our emotions, the better we're going to be at making decisions, which leads to a better life. And that's something we all want. We're glad that you've taken out the time today to listen and hope that something that you hear will lead to a breakthrough. Hey, one last thing. We'd really appreciate a review on whichever platform you use to listen. And if you want to, leave some comments about what you heard today, as well as follow and subscribe. That way you won't miss a single episode as we continue this journey. And with that, the show begins. Scott Schweitzer, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. In our work, well, I wouldn't say it was work. When we had it was sort of informational, right? We had that conversation.
Just having coffee.
Yeah. And I need to say this. I think I can say it publicly. At the time, that was just before a bunch of you know what hit the fan for me personally.
Okay.
And I went dark, and I'm sure I was thinking to myself, you know, there have been times where I was traveling up to Akron, I'm going, I need to get with Scott. And I'm thinking, Scott's probably thinking, who is this guy? He says he wants me on the podcast, but that was back, and now this is like we're in April going into May, so are we in May already?
We're in May.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So I'm so glad
almost
that you're
half
here.
Through.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Nobody's counting.
Yeah. I hear you. And I found your background so intriguing because it has a sense of what I would call uniqueness that is not an everyday thing. So, if I may, for our audience, you're a political consultant.
Yes, sir.
All right. You're also an entrepreneur, which I know the political consultant thing is pretty much entrepreneurism to a degree, and we're going to get into that. But you're also an entrepreneur in the microbrewery world.
Space,
mm-hmm. Right? So, I'm going to start there.
Okay.
How does a political consultant become an entrepreneur in microbrewing?
drinking one night with friends.
Okay.
So that's a real story. So one of my best friends, Ryan and I and our wives were sitting there just doing a beer tasting with each other.
Okay.
And there's four friends sitting at a table, and he lamented the fact that, hey, why don't we have anything cool like they have downtown around us.
Okay.
And I don't know if either of you are Myers-Briggs personality people.
Familiar with it.
Yeah. So I am an ISTJ. So IS, introvert, sensing, thinking, judging, ISTJ.
Okay.
He is an ENFP, so complete opposite of everything that I am. So
yeah.
If you were to describe it probably on a piece of paper, I think I fall into the accountant personality, whereas he falls into the showman personality. Outgoing, he at the time was working at the Ronald McDonald House, and you know, anytime that there was an event, he's comfortable sitting, you know, getting in front of a microphone. He and I actually met each other at church playing worship music together. He was the worship leader, and I was the guy hiding behind the drum set. So still able to partake, but have a safety and security net around me.
Is this the first time we've talked about music on the podcast?
That's unfortunately, Scott, or not.
Everyone?
Yeah, we typically always have some kind of musical reference.
We got two bass players sitting
there. All right. Yeah. So you know how to tell when there's a drummer at the door, right?
How?
The knocks just keep getting faster. So as a bass player.
Okay, I need to remember that one, too.
Add that to your repertoire.
Anyway, never mind.
Yeah. So, you know, we had that conversation and I said, hey, you know what? I'll put together the first draft of a business plan. And so a few days go by and I sent around the first draft of a business plan and it said, yeah, you know, there is a market here. We would have to raise a certain amount of funds in order to make it happen.
Right.
And he said, well, let's just ask our guy group of friends if they'd be interested. And just from, you know, that conversation, we essentially had half of the money raised. And so it's like, all right, I guess we're off running and doing this thing.
Wow.
So,
wow. And how long in the political consultant realm for you?
25 years.
Okay, wow. So you've been at it for a minute.
I've seen a lot of change in America.
Oh, I bet you have. I bet you have. That kind of leads me to another question. And I'm not in that world. I only observe it from where I get sources of information, whether it be human or, you know, online or what have you. It seems so full of these powerful emotions, right?
Sure.
And probably the one that's most noted these days is, you know, this divisiveness, you know, this I don't like you because you did this, and I don't like you because you did that, or you support that person and I support this person.
Yeah.
You're not on the stage with the candidates per se, but you've observed this, I'm sure. What are some of your thoughts around that piece of it?
I've observed it, and not only observed it, I would say as a manner of vocation,
right.
Part of what I do is engage in those conversations.
Okay.
It's a lot more powerful to separate people than it is to bring people together, unfortunately. And I think it's a problem that we have not only in U.S. elections, but just in humanity and connection with other people.
Right.
It's, you know, we have a desire to be part of a tribe, and that tribalism oftentimes, while it brings us closer, it also separates us from other people. And the most powerful things that you can do in elected politics, if I'm actually doing messaging for you, is to offer hope, to offer change, or to make somebody else an enemy. And unfortunately, I think we're in the position right now in American politics and in politics probably globally, mm-hmm. where just due to more tribalism, due to social media and us getting a reoccurring feed of what our own beliefs are, scrolling, I agree with that, I agree with that. Just reinforcement of that same emotion, negativity, positivity, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. just that reinforcement of the same belief system that I have, all of a sudden that says that, oh, well, if somebody disagrees with me, well, they're wrong, they're the enemy. And that causes more separation. And unfortunately, in politics, it's a lot more powerful for me to have you dislike somebody, dislike a candidate, than it is to have you like a candidate.
And it's interesting to me, Scott, you mentioned as a vocation, right? So I used to, at one point in my career, be in banking.
Mm-hmm.
Paid for all of my sins, and then they let me go. That was a joke, by the way. Mm-hmm. You could laugh, Jeff. Thank you. I'm working on my stand-up career. But it's interesting, when you think about banking, the business that was, at least for me was, you're lending money with interest and on terms that sometimes were not necessarily in the best interest of the borrowers, right? Right. And I'm not talking illegal, but there was certainly times when we were targets of a lot of vitriol because of fill in the blank. And it seemed to always be that way. But for people like me, it was like, hey, look, I have a job. I have I have to earn a living. I have to pay my mortgage and put food on the table. I have a family.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I understand there is a point where you might have to decide it's a bridge too far, but as you mentioned it as a vocation, how did you manage that to be able to keep the two in sort of in good tension? Or is it?
Who says I have?
Right.
It's a struggle that I have just in terms of, being a people person that, honestly, some of my closest friends are people that do this, but just for candidates of an opposite political persuasion.
Right, right.
We can agree to disagree. And I think there's a lot of power in being able to sit down with somebody and respecting them despite your difference of opinions and being able to listen.
Yeah.
It's something that I'm still, I still work and I still struggle with.
Do you think that this unwillingness to listen goes through beyond what you do in your work?
Sure, absolutely.
How do you see it affecting everything?
Just society in general. Letting somebody in as they're trying to merge in a lane of traffic, getting upset over things like that. It's the minute things and how we treat other people. We have a conscious decision that we can make. Despite how somebody treats us, we still get to make a decision on how we respond to that treatment.
Yeah.
And I feel like that all the time myself. And that's something that I continue to work on.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately, you know, we're here. I'm a big reader. I'll say that. My wife will laugh. I try to be a big reader.
There you go.
I read regularly.
Yeah.
Currently, I'm reading through, what am I reading through? Marcus Aurelius's Meditations.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks through there, and it's either the first one or the second one, just in terms of, you know, really how our days are numbered. We don't know at what point, even if our days aren't numbered, if we're still going to be able to even participate in things, either due to health or health of our body or health of our brain. And, you know, it is a short period of time that we're here for. So what kind of impact can you make on the earth and in your community in this time period that we have? And so I think that in what I do in politics, to bring it back to that, I think that by and large, I do primarily work for men and women that I believe have a heart to change America for the better, to change local communities for the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every now and then ego will get in the way, either theirs or mine, that hampers that. And we get lost from the sight of service to others. And I think it's just something we need to come back to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. One of the other things you mentioned was the reinforcement of these emotions via social media. We had an episode that we recorded where we talked a bit about some of the dark side of social media. And I consider what you described as being that, right?
Yeah.
This idea that if I live in my own echo chamber, it does not really allow me. And I'll give you an example, Scott.
Yeah.
I have a client who... very much a supporter of affirmative action,
mm-hmm.
right? And I might have brought this up in a previous episode, and it just has stuck with me.
Yeah.
And I, over time, have developed more of an opinion about affirmative action as not a good thing, right? Not complete 100%, but just tip on the face of it. And he just told me a story of growing up in India,
mm-hmm.
where if you wanted to read something,
yeah.
somebody had to travel some miles to get to another town where they were literate. So they basically were functioning illiterate, mm-hmm. in his little neck of the woods. And he said, but everyone had an aspiration to go to college, post, you know, secondary type thing. And he said that, there was no way we were going to score high enough on the entrance exams. So I guess in India, they had their form of where, okay, if you were from this area, we will allow you to enter into university,
mm-hmm.
even though you scored 60 and the minimum was 80 or whatever. And he said it really gave them a lift.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and say to you that I was like, all of a sudden, let's go affirmative action. But what it did is it gave me a different perspective on it that I would have never, I had no context around what was happening in India and how they,
mm-hmm.
all of that dynamic. And I just think that if we somehow can, in my opinion, resurrect curiosity and some level of reflection, maybe we'd find, maybe I should get outside of my echo chamber a little more. Well, what are your thoughts about that?
Oh gosh, I can go down a few different levels here and talk about the Bakke case and the historical affirmative action universities and benefits.
And I want to keep you, Scott.
I don't want to give you some guardrails here.
Yeah, the guardrails would be overall. I don't want to take you down the affirmative action rabbit hole. So just the idea of breeding more curiosity and being willing to go outside of your echo chamber to hear a different point of view.
Sure. I mean, I think it would go back to I have three daughters, and the advice that I give them, especially when they were younger, and I still say it to them when they ask me, or probably better put, when I'm actually awake to see them as they go off to school, because they go off to school so early.
Yeah.
But I always say, you know, ask questions. And I think that's the best way that you learn. I think that's also the best way that you understand others,
mm-hmm.
You know, is to ask questions.
Well, and that increases the chances that we have three more people on the planet who are curious versus the closing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of do a pivot,
yeah.
to the connection that may or may not be there between the brewery business and political consulting. Have you found that there was some level of doing one that helped the other from an entrepreneurial perspective or otherwise?
Dealing with people, communicating, still needing to have a product that somebody wants to buy. I always say that in politics, my job is to get a 50% plus one market share for a product that nobody has an interest in purchasing. Whereas with the brewery, there's actually a product that people want to purchase. I'm just trying to, you know, increase market share and show why my product's the best. So it still comes down to people need to know about it mm-hmm. before they're willing to buy it, and buy it being a beverage or be it a candidate or an idea.
Yeah.
So there's still, there's still marketing aspects mm-hmm. of both.
Right. Mm-hmm. And obviously you said one is welcomed and one is sort of
tolerated.
Tolerated, maybe it's a good word. I don't know what you think about that, Jeff. I mean, when we tolerated is a good, really good word.
Yeah.
But there is a need for elected officials in our lives.
Yeah.
In the work that they do. I mean, I will say, growing up, I always thought that I wanted to be an elective office, and I do have respect for the men and women that choose to run.
Yeah.
It is. It's not fun, especially right now. I mean, you can't go to the grocery store without somebody stopping you and wanting to yell at you. So it is a sacrifice for those individuals and their families. I always say to people that are upset about the way that things are going, to get involved, volunteer. Even go knock doors, walk in a parade, host a meeting. Frequently, even just on the local level, a school board race or a city hall race or a township trustee race, mm-hmm. You know your local neighbors, and if they're running for office, invite other neighbors to get to know them as a way to get involved.
I dip my toe in. I'm on the condo board.
All right. Yeah.
Because it was going bad.
But it's still a thankless job, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But
whose door gets knocked on?
Yeah.
Their kids are loud. Kids are loud. They're kids.
Yeah, it's a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's on a very, very low level, but it just seems like, yeah, people forget that whether you agree or like the person, they're still a person.
Yeah,
and we need to keep that aspect of it in there.
Do you find, Scott? Let's say that the person, and I may be butchering the process of how this happens, sure. but let's say that the Republican Party selects Bill Smith okay. to run for fill in the blank.
Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
Said that, and I didn't know I was going there. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. And they're the person, and they decide the campaign site they're going to hire you.
Okay.
What do you say to them in the beginning? I mean,
I look at my job as not to tell a candidate what they think, but to find out what they think most aligns with what people are excited by. So I think there's a belief out there that a lot of these politicians are driven by poll language. They're going to get a poll. They're going to look at that and say, well, the citizens think that, you know, roads are the most important issue, so I'm just going to talk about roads.
Right.
What we're doing is finding out what is it about you that you already believe in that gets all the voters excited. And that's what we want to repeat and share. Mm. And then I want to make it human. So what is it about your story? Why did you decide to run? Everybody has a story on why they decided to run.
That's one thing that I was wondering if you were going to go to, the why behind it. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought, and I don't know if you remember this in our conversation some months ago, and I said that, you know, it's very clear to me, at least in the United States, that our, you know, fill in the blanks, Senate, Congress, the executive branch, have not been really good at making decisions. Their decision making is poor, connected to that we have $32 trillion in debt. And that's not a shot at any political party, because it's both. I mean, and it's kind of that thing like, if I came to you, Scott, and said, hey, I can't go into business with you because I've got $32 trillion in debt. You know, I couldn't say, well, don't, you know, I can explain. You're probably immediately going, he's probably made some bad decisions.
Yeah.
Whether they be like conscious ones of wasting and all the rest, or by life circumstances. Mm-hmm. So you can't get around that. Our business is to help leaders get better at decision making by becoming more emotionally intelligent. So when I say all that, it kind of leads me toward, do you find that many of the candidates know what the why is?
I think most of them do. I think most of them, I'll go with most of them. Most of them do. Some of them, they're looking for fulfillment themselves. They've had success in business. Uh-huh. And now they're like, well, that didn't give me a sense of self-worth, or I still have this hole in my heart that I need to fill with something, and maybe it's going to be power. I've reached money. Maybe it's influence that I need to have, and that's what's going to make me happy. And some candidates and elected officials are like that. But I think by and large, most of them see that, they served in the military, and, they saw heartache. They experienced a problem as a child that they were helped out by someone, and that, that really got them off in running. And for everybody, it's a different story.
Story. Yeah.
But overall, you mentioned that you were in banking, and just to try this, tie this all through, on a banking in an emotional sense. I'm actually going to say, I'm going to raise my hand because I have no idea where I'm going with this one right now.
All right, so pause. And actually, that's great. I'm glad you did that because
I'm like, I was thinking, like, I'm banking, like with banking. I mean, it used to be rulers, like, a new ruler would come in. I'm talking about like Fertile Crescent Babylon area, era. A new ruler would come in, and there would be grain debts or other debts. And as a way to endear themselves to the people, they would do away with all the debts. Forgive the debts.
Okay.
Which even, I mean, biblically speaking, forgiving debts, forgiving sins is, part of us having a better relationship with somebody else. And that ruler would do that as a way to ingratiate themselves. And I'm not sure how that, so what I was thinking through is, well, how does that tie into what I'm doing?
That's very fascinating, though. Did you get that, Brad?
That's what I was trying to tie together. And that's why I raised my hand, because I'm like, I don't know how I tie all that together.
That's all right. That's all right. So. I want to, and I'll pick it up now. One of the things about your work that I think is interesting, though I may be totally wrong here, do you have like a blend of clientele? Meaning, do you have Democrats that will call on you, Republicans will call on you, independents, or is it all one versus the other?
So folks that have a similar role to myself, we typically work for candidates of one party persuasion.
Okay.
The rationale behind that is if I'm going to you, you're running for office, and you want to know from a philosophy and belief system that I agree with you, and I want to work with you to make sure that what you believe is implemented as policy.
Gotcha.
So typically, I would say 95% of the people that do what I do work for people of one political persuasion.
Is that pretty much what you would find across the board, whether it's your firm or someone else's?
Correct.
They typically are in that.
Yeah, and I would say the 5% that are the exception, I would say there's still something about the candidates that they work for that's a common thread throughout it. I only work for candidates that are pro-life, pro-choice, or I only work for candidates that are, pro-Second Amendment. So there has to be some kind of other driving issue behind what they're doing.
Regardless of party affiliation.
Yeah, I work for the candidate that's always going to support public schools. And
Got it.
Have you had have you been to the point where you said, I just can't work with this candidate? Has that ever happened with you?
Yeah. Pass. No, I mean we're blessed by all candidates that we work with, and there's frequently candidates that I might disagree with, but at the end of the day, it's their name on the ballot, it's their reputation on the line. It's my job to do what I can do to ensure that their belief and their value statement is shared, so people actually know what their story is. I can work with people and still, it goes back to what we were saying earlier, I can work with people and still disagree with them on things.
But maybe I need to, not necessarily that it's about what they're running on, but you just can't work with this person.
And we'll be back to the episode after this. And now back to the episode. Jeff, what is the SEQ Development Report?
I'm glad you asked me that, Eric. The SEQ Development Report is something that we here at Spirit of EQ have developed to blend the idea of emotional intelligence with a person's spiritual life. And we're not talking about religion. We're talking about how they connect with themselves, other people, and the world around them.
Why is it important?
I think it's important because it allows someone to see where they stand, to give them information about maybe parts of their life they may need to work on, parts of their life that they're really doing well and learn to leverage it. And it just gives a person a better way of getting through the world.
So how do you get this report?
Well, first, you need to contact us.
Mm-hmm.
Info@spiritofeq is just a great way to do it. Then you would take an assessment, 15, 20 minutes, done online. And then after that, the report requires a debrief to go through all the things in it because it's got a ton of information. And then if you want to further your journey, we can do coaching and things like that with you down the road. And that's basically it.
Cool. Thanks, Jeff. So you're talking personality?
Personality. I mean, I would say politicians are known to be difficult at times.
A little headstrong?
Yeah. I think I've been given the gift of patience.
Okay.
And in some ways, Scott, though, you hit on something. There's a certain level of, when you have a certain level of familiarity, a certain level of, okay, I've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. This is the type. I mean, I know like in our work, one of the things that in the beginning, it did throw me off, but again, after you've adjusted and adapted, skepticism.
Sure.
You know, people who are going like, I don't know why you want to come here and talk about this kind of thing. Here we go, type stuff. And again, in the beginning, that was a little, but now it's kind of like, okay, I know. I go in, you don't trust me. I go in, yep, you're skeptical. That's okay. Yeah. I just need you to be open.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to convert you. I'm not trying to tell you that you're wrong, or I just need you to kind of sit in that chair and give it a chance.
Now, you're usually the one asking the questions, but have you seen that? I can't help myself. Have you seen that change recently? Like even over the last 5 years compared to 10 years ago, have you seen?
Worse.
It's worse.
Yeah. More skepticism. And I think part of that is rooted around, and we talked about this previously, is the disruption that AI is bringing to the fore.
Okay.
Because, you know, my opinion, if AI is disrupting your world and taking from what you once sort of leveraged,
mm-hmm.
then you're left with the other areas. And the other areas, and what I'm speaking to, is the spiritual and the emotional.
Yeah.
Right? And if that muscle has not been developed, okay, and then there's this person that comes in and says, okay, we're going to talk about this side of your brain that you pay zero attention to. And my gosh, the last time you paid attention to it, it was probably 30 years ago or 20 years ago.
You haven't exercised it. It's going to
right?
be. Yeah.
So there's the fear factor. It's like, I don't need that. I'm good. Defense. Brain's going into protect mode. Protect. So what I have to do.
Fight, flight, freeze.
Right. Yeah. The whole deal. You're in that sympathetic state. So what I have to do is I have to provide at least some kind of climate where that's okay.
Yeah.
You can be skeptical. It's okay.
Yeah.
If you're thinking this is a bunch of nonsense, but can we agree that I'm not talking about, hey, let's sit down and talk about, did you cry when you saw that movie about the horse that was running a race and broke its leg and had to be put down? No, I'm talking about, we're going to learn about an area of your brain that the vast majority of people haven't paid a lot of attention to it, at least here in the United States. I'm just going to kind of help you understand that there's some things going on in your brain that maybe could be helpful to you. But hey, I get it. skeptic. Mm-hmm. I understand. That's typically how we roll.
Yeah.
Not always perfection, but, you know. What about when we think of learning, right?
Okay.
You've got a history there. If you could say, how long in the brewery business?
Oh, 7 years?
The
brewery's been open just over six. I would say I've been on at least on the periphery of the brewing business for eight.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to take your political consulting world. What are some lessons that you've learned? Maybe those like, hey, you know, when we did this, this was really powerful. I won't forget that.
I would say by and large, the most important thing a candidate can do, and I would say we can do as even individuals, is emotionally connect with people. I'll get there in a second. Emotionally connect with people. Usually the first ad that we are going to do for a candidate, mm-hmm. there's going to be bio information in there so we know who you are. But the more of an emotional appeal that can have and an emotional connection that can have with somebody else, the more likely they are that they're going to like you, the more likely that you can build a bond with them. And then it becomes what others have referred to as, you know, going back to the Bill Clinton rule of politics, which is once voters decide they like you, they sure are a lot more willing to forgive you when indiscretions come up.
So I sometimes take things down a weird path, so I'm going to do that.
Awesome.
Let's look at what we're talking about, but from the aspect of, in one way or another, we're all running for election every minute of the day.
Okay.
That
sounds awful, but I'm listening. But
I'm hoping you elect me to like me.
Sure. Okay.
You know, that aspect.
But
that's
exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah. What would you tell someone that I don't think people realize that they're doing that?
Sure. And they are. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. How can we help people with that aspect of I always have to prove myself so that they like me or elect me, however you want to say it.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
Are you saying that from the sense they're seeking personal validation by
affirmation,
personal validation. I don't want people to think I'm an idiot or bad or, you know.
Well, I think then it also comes down to just the problem of comparison. You know, I tell my girls that, you know, we don't compare in our family. It's one of two things happen. Either, you know, pride because you're better off than somebody else, or else you get envious because you don't have what they have, or you're not as good as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more we do that with other people, it's dangerous. Going back to social media, I mean, you're looking at somebody else's highlight reel where you're living your blooper reel, and
we don't see their blooper reel.
Correct. And so I think it's easy to say, hey, be who you are, and, you know, your friends will accept you, and then you'll know who your friends are. But that's hard.
Yeah. It's really hard.
Yeah.
I took us down a weird path. I'm sorry.
No.
It's all right. You're allowed. You're a co-host. You can do that.
That's right. I forgot. Do you still like me, Eric?
Of course. Yes. Always, Jeff.
Good job.
Are you familiar with David Hogue? I think that's how he pronounces his name. Hog or Hogue.
H-O-G-U-E?
H-O-G-G. And you probably would remember him from, I believe it was the shooting in Florida, Parkland. Okay. He really went activist after that, very strong in gun control and all things of that nature. And you could like him, dislike him, think his views and ideas. And now I believe most recently he was challenging somebody in the Democratic National Committee for some role within
vaguely familiar, yeah.
I saw him on Bill Maher's show, Real Time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was on the main show. He has this thing called Overtime, which is kind of like this is what happens after the official show's over and he continues on. And he brought up something I thought was pretty profound, and I wasn't expecting it, which, again, I'm going to go to the curiosity thing, right?
Yeah.
And he said something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing, he said he had talked to, like, someone who had been in the party for a long, long time, and he said, if I give up my seat, if I retire, then I have nothing. And what am I going to do with my life when, and this, again, I'm sorry for the audience if I'm mispronouncing his last name. This David Hoag says, well, you need to get over yourself because it's not your seat. It's your constituent seat.
Yeah.
You're there to serve your constituents. And all I'm asking for is for the opportunity for people to choose who they want. I'm not asking you to get out of the, you know, to retire. And I go, interesting.
Yeah.
Because I've heard things from him before that were very, you know, it was almost like a, no one should be allowed to have a gun at all, ever. And even within that, I go, oh, well, Scott, I got to be curious here because, wait a minute, his experience with guns is such that it's shaping, right? No different than if you had a relative that died of an opioid overdose. Mm-hmm. To say that, well, no, I've totally separated it, and I'm only going to focus on whether or not opiates are should be blah, blah, blah. I had some empathy for that reality.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm not saying this because I'm such a great guy and I'm reflective and optimistic and all, you know, curious. But I sometimes think that to me is where we could maybe kind of sort of narrow the divide a bit, right? Because from an emotion standpoint, our adage, right, or the approach is we manage what we think and what we feel in the decision that follows.
Yeah.
And if we can follow that process, it leads to more optimal decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a rabbit hole for you, David Hoag.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hard in politics if I'm doing something on an issue.
Yeah.
For me to educate someone in terms of, hey, here are the five reasons why you should say yes to issue one.
Yeah.
If they personally have an experience that is opposite of what I'm saying, an experience is always going to trump information.
And can I stop you right there?
Go for it.
Right. My brother died of an overdose. I mean, it was horrific. I mean, he died on the street, right? My son and I yesterday were talking about marijuana.
Yeah.
And my son is proclaiming, marijuana is not a gateway drug, Dad. It's not a gateway drug. And I could feel it. It was almost as if my images and my history just started on like start from the beginning. And I said to him, fortunately, we were in a restaurant. It was Mother's Day. So it was not, you're wrong. And you can't say that. And I'm gonna, you know, there was no pounding of the table at all. Right. And I just said to him, I said, Grant, I got to tell you, as someone who had a front row seat, sometimes, if not oftentimes, yeah, it is a gateway, man. I didn't get to tell him this, Scott, though, in that time, is that one of the reasons why I think it's a gateway is because the consumption of it, outside of those who are using it for truly medical reasons, is to escape reality, is to find a place where they can I just not have to deal? And once that particular drug runs out of its effectiveness, the opportunity for other things that can do even more to help with that escape, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you're right. The experience that I had with my brother was so powerful that, oh, I have to say something. And you can tell me that there are 20 different scientific studies that says it's not a gateway drug. My experience trumps that. Mm-hmm. So in that situation, is it you just accept that that's part of the audience that's going to have an experience more driven idea, or how do you approach that?
It depends. Mm-hmm. So no two situations are the same. It depends what we're trying to educate voters on, or the story that we're trying to tell about, you know, a candidate and who they are. So it's it really is.
Yeah, because someone else's experience, right? I mean, they could say, well, yeah, you know, maybe that happened to you, but with me, when my mom had cancer, it really helped her navigate that from a pain perspective. Well, I'm not going to say, well, no, your mom, that's wrong. It didn't happen that way.
But when I'm doing my work as a consultant, if I can actually get you to talk about your experience and how your experience relates to a candidate or an issue, that also now ties another emotional connection to a voter. And it goes back to that somebody that a message that's driven emotionally is going to hit and land a lot more and be a lot more sticky, if you will, in the mind than just, you know, a PowerPoint with, you know, the 10 best things. Here we go.
Yeah. And I'm going to go into, because I'm fascinated by this. Would that mean that in my case, and I'm just going to stick with the marijuana thing, that if somebody was trying to pass legislation or land an issue on the ballot, they would make marijuana illegal, they would come to someone like me who could say to the world, let me
tell you my story.
Right. Mm-hmm. Versus the person whose mom had cancer. Mm-hmm. That might be for those who would oppose the.
Yeah. Just think back. I mean, historically, how we are as a people. Did we generation after generation after generation hand down list, or did we hand out stories?
The prison ministry that I'm involved in, it's very, has a set way to do it. And there's talks that people give, and there's an outline of this aspect of being a Christian, but there's a part in there for personal witness. And I've shared, you know, given many of these talks in this ministry, and I'll run into a resident, a prisoner from maybe 15 years ago. He doesn't remember what talk I gave. He remembers the story I shared from my life. That is the connection that we have. That is what impacted him. So what you're saying is...
It goes back... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say storytelling is so powerful.
Yeah, it goes back to the saying, you know, people won't remember what you said, they'll remember how you made them feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the best thing that we can do to other people is.
Boy, you talk about something that should be, I'm just thinking about my son, I remember having this conversation with him. I said, I don't know if you realize it or not. His employer thinks the world of him. I mean, and it's not because he's made them millions and millions of dollars. It's not because he's the top salesperson of blah, blah, blah. I mean, he's just getting underway, right? But I said to him, I said, you should pay attention to this. The reason why they are doing all that they are for you is because of the way you made them feel.
Yeah.
That leaves the deepest of imprints on the soul, you know? And I think he might be getting it. I think. I think.
See, how old is he now?
23.
Well done, Dad.
Is it two more years and his brain's finally developed?
I am stupid until then. Scott, as we kind of get close to the end, man, this hour has gone by fast, which is great. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Any advice would you give to someone who's thinking about entrepreneurship? I know you kind of came into it somewhat accidentally, at least on the brewery side.
Yeah.
Anything you would say to them if they're thinking about it, they came to you and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing X or doing Y?
Be willing to fail. So even just how our brains work. I mean, if I have my three daughters, two of them are competitive ice skaters. One does ice dance, the other does traditional figure skating. But when you're learning, to jumps, if either of you ever skateboarded, when you're going down that ramp the first time, you got to know you're going to fall. And, you know, that's the only way that you're going to get that trick, that you're going to get that jump, that you're going to understand that is by practice, by failing. So not being afraid to fail would probably be my advice to them is, you know, the best way to learn is to do. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking about doing... opening up a business to sell widgets, well, start selling them. And if you fail, pay attention to why you failed so you can improve processes, you can improve the product, you can improve yourself.
And not allow that failure to dominate your decision after?
Yeah. Now, if you keep failing for the same reason time and time again, maybe this isn't for you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess perhaps that's wisdom.
Yeah. I don't know your perspective on this, Jeff, but I almost think of failure, Scott, as it's part of the preparation process, preparing me for the greater successes ahead. I think far too often, culturally, right, we give people the impression success is everything, failure is to be avoided at all costs. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's extremely rare and extremely lucky if you succeed the first time. It can happen. Mm-hmm. You can just have all the right ingredients, but it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
I've been married for 47 years this year, and fail sometimes.
It's been awesome all 47 years, right?
No. I think more than my wife, but no. Yeah, I know that I'm going to fail.
Yeah.
And if I don't pay attention to how she responds when I do a failure, it's going to get worse. But if I go, okay, I made this mistake, I'm sorry, but more importantly, it's I know not to do it again.
Yeah.
The curiosity, we talk about curiosity so much in these podcasts.
Yeah.
Being curious about why.
Yeah. And this doesn't relate to entrepreneurship, but more just to human beings. It's just the ability to have grace for other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. It's tough sometimes. Just to not say, well, you know, I was right and yeah, you were wrong. I mean, just sometimes you don't need to say anything.
And the other thing, I think grace or empathy for other people, but then one of the competencies that we have in our model of EQ is empathy. And people, you rank high in empathy, but I ask you, do you have self-empathy?
Mm.
Most people have never, ever considered that. Have you run into that?
No, of course, man. Yeah. I mean, that is one of the most forgotten areas of the subject of empathy. And some of it's rooted in societal-wise. Mm-hmm. We've kind of been taught that empathy means, well, Scott, I'm sorry, or Scott, that must be tough for you. But if I make that same mistake that Scott made, we typically would go either we ignore yourself or you
beat yourself up.
You beat yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I'm thinking one of the dangers that I see on the horizon is that lack of the development of that muscle, a thing that we talked about, the emotional and spiritual. And it's almost, and I alluded to this right after the pandemic and all that happened in that 2020 to 2022-ish. It was as if our patterns were just disrupted in such a way, and everyone's, the pulling of the rug right out underneath our feet. And one of the things that it did is it exposed our overemphasis on this side of our sort of brain, if you will, that intellectual, analytical, right? And it especially when the lockdowns were happening, because you no longer had that.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't leverage that to get out of the problem because it was pretty much nothing's going to happen here. Everybody's going to have to. I mean, and I think we're in that next phase of that thing with AI. It's disrupting at such a level that you're not going to be able to hang your hat on how much you learned in your graduate degree. You're not going to be because you had 10 years of experience developing whatever, because AI is outpacing that. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That processing speed and the doubling.
It's amazing.
So I see that impacting elections now and how elected members respond to, you know, constituents and their activities. But let me ask you, so what is the best way then to exercise that muscle?
Well, since you asked, commercial alert, come see Spirit of EQ and get some of these tools. In all seriousness, even if you choose to go at it a different way, because some people, they'll read a book. Some people will listen to the podcast. Some people do work with us formally where it is a paid engagement. They want to learn this thing. I think that is, it has, whatever it is you choose to do, it's got to be an intentional act on your part. Because again, we wear out sports analogies, and Jeff can say, I wear out the exercise analogies.
So we're going to music analogies then?
No, we're going to stay on, we're going to do the exercise analogy.
I'm the gearhead analogy. Okay.
Right? But it, Scott, is if I say to you, Scott, I need to get stronger, man. I'm at a stage in life where, you know, I want to be able to pick up my grandkids one day, and I want to still be able to go for walks and stuff. So I got to get stronger, Scott. Well, Scott, more than likely, you're probably going to ask me, so, okay, so are you lifting weights? Are you doing some kind of strength training? How's that going? What's your diet like? You know, how much protein? I can't say to you, well, Scott, I thought it would just be if I went to the gym tomorrow, I'd be good. No, it is an ongoing process. And I get it. It's humorous in the sense that we go, oh, Eric, we know that. But it's interesting. We know it, yet we don't apply the intentionality to it. And I get it. You know, it is hard work.
Yeah.
Because when you start working over in that spiritual, emotional side, you might encounter some of those demons that you'd prefer not to see, talk about, and all the rest.
Yeah.
But it'd be different, Scott, if I was telling you there are no resources to help. You're on your own. There are tons of resources for help. We can go from clergy to psychiatrist to Spirit of EQ to a book. There's resources. We can circle that back around to AI. Yeah. You could go into an AI chatbot and said, I need X. It's going to give it to you really quick.
Yeah.
But it's that intentionality thing. That's the key.
All right.
Yeah.
We could keep going, but you got things to do in life, and our show is coming close, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Scott,
that's good.
Can't thank you enough for joining us. Yeah. Would you come back again?
Sure, if you'd want to have me.
Absolutely. This pleasure. Has been great. We always measure with our guests is how fast the hour goes.
Right. Okay.
And yours went super fast because I'm not really finished. There are some other things I would, but for that sake.
Okay.
Once again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
We appreciate you, audience, as well, for joining us, and we look forward to the next time that we're together. Take care. Hi, everyone. This is Eric Pennington with the Spirit of EQ. I'm not introducing a new episode today. I'm here to tell you some things that might help you. Jeff, you're with me as always. So
yes.
How do people get in touch with us?
Well, the best way is just send us an email at info@spiritofeq.com.
That's awesome. Jeff, I was also thinking about reviews, and I'm notoriously bad at asking for them. So reviews on all of the platforms, wherever you get your podcasts,
yes.
You think that'd be good?
I think that would be great because, one, that will help us learn how to make better ones. And it's always good for us.
So we're not the perfect podcast hosts.
We're close.
Okay, all right, but
not,
still
not totally.
We want
perfect.
Your feedback. We want your feedback.
But it also might let us know a new subject. Hey, we need to dig deeper into that.
Yeah.
So let us know what you think.
Cool. We really appreciate that. As always, too, there is social media: LinkedIn, Facebook, and we also have a YouTube channel. Those also have mechanisms or options for you to be able to leave a comment, a like, or those kind of things. Just want to make sure that you know how to get in touch with us. Right, Jeff?
Right. We appreciate you all.
Thank you. Once again, we really appreciate you tuning in today. One of the things that Jeff and I want to bring to your attention as well is that when we created this podcast, it was not intended to take the place of a clinician. In other words, if you find yourself in a place where there's something deeper going on or something that you cannot solve on your own, we do recommend that you reach out to a clinician of some sort. This podcast is purely opinion-based, and it is rooted in the desire to help you along your path in whatever way we can. However, it is never going to replace, nor should it ever be looked at as a replacement for clinical help in any way. Thanks again for tuning in.